August 17, 2021, Swap for Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. Started off John Coltrane doing Equinox. And then we had Andy Chernoff. Excuse me, sir. Wow, what'd you do? Just fart?
No, man. I'm here.
My imaginary friend. That's from Andy Chernoff. And people, you can tell I'm not man alone because of the wonders of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Mr. Andy Chernoff. How you doing? Welcome aboard,
an absolute brother. Pleasure to be with you, Mike.
And are you talking to me from
An honor and a pleasure.
Are you talking to me from Manhattan?
No, I moved out of New York. I'm living upstate New York. I'm a country boy.
Wow, what town?
It's not even a town. It's a hamlet called Mount Tremper. It's about 10 minutes from Woodstock.
How do you spell that?
Mount, M-O-U-N-T, space, T-R-E-M-P-E-R. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Tremper,
T-R-E-M-P-E-R.
Okay. Well, there's a tradition now of people leaving the city and going up the river, huh? Hudson Valley, right? That's what that's called.
Well, Hudson Valley, but it's people of a certain age, you know. I'm at retirement age, so
okay.
Ready for a little different lifestyle.
I think Levon Helm ended up in Woodstock.
Oh yeah, he's. I've been to his barn many times. See concerts. There's one of the main roads going into Woodstock is called Levon Helm Highway. So he's a hero.
Yeah, he's a hero to me too. I always like the way he plays drums and sang. Let's talk about your journey through music, though, Andy. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection is my parents playing the Weavers and Pete Seeger in our apartment.
And where was this?
This is in Jackson Heights. Okay. I grew up in an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, me and my brother and my parents. And my parents were, I wouldn't say they were beatniks, but they leaned a little bit towards that. You know, they were beatnik adjacent, and they liked the Weavers, and they leaned a bit left in the politics. And my first memory is the Weavers on the record player, plus West Side Story. Also, I remember hearing that.
What about instruments? Was there instruments in this apartment?
Oh, yes, yes. Piano, guitars.
And your parents could play? Your brother could play?
Oh, well, I was the older brother. My aunt was a music teacher. My mother's mother played violin and piano. She died when very young. My mother was young. And my mother sang, played guitar, and my uncle played piano and sang in choirs. There was music in my house all the time. I was always around music.
Yeah. Did you ever jump on that piano?
All the time. I still do. I love playing piano.
Yeah, but I'm trying to, like, get the Wayback Machine going here. So, did you have to go through the lessons thing?
First, my parents tried to get me to take clarinet lessons. I took about a few, and I said, it's not for me. Then they got me to take piano lessons, and my piano teacher was Arnold Friedman from the movie Capturing the Friedmans. You ever see that movie?
No, but I know about it.
Yeah, the guy was accused of molesting children, and he was my piano teacher.
And like Ishmael, you lived to tell the tale.
I lived to tell the tale. He never tried anything, okay. But I stopped taking piano lessons with him. This might be an interesting little tale. He used to give me music to popular tunes, and but the music wasn't really, it wasn't accurate. So I played it my own way, which I thought was more like the way the record sounded, basically improvising around the melody. And he was going, well, but that's not what the sheet music says. But the sheet music is wrong. So anyway, I did about maybe 10 lessons with him, and then I quit.
You know, there's a parallel to that. Like, if you go search the internet for lyrics, and you find the most, like, Blue Oyster Cult, right? And you find the most interesting guesses at what they were actually saying. I know everything on the internet's supposed to be true, but yeah, maybe it's like that sheet music. You learned early to be a little skeptical.
Yes, I did.
So, can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No. Not my elementary school didn't have that. Okay. I was all sports in elementary school.
Okay. Because can I ask you this?
Let me just a little bit more.
Okay.
All sports, including Johnny Thunders, who attended my elementary school in the same grade. So
Johnny wanted to be a baseball player, right?
He was an athlete, yes.
A little small.
Yeah. But he played sports in the schoolyard with everybody else.
Yeah. I've read about that. It was a dream of his. You know, I loved his guitar playing and stuff. It's a tragedy.
Oh, me too.
Let me ask you about the first record you bought with your own money.
First record I ever bought with the Beach Boys Today.
California.
Yes. Now, I love the Beach Boys.
You know,
and I love the dark.
You know they didn't live on the beach. You're about 10, 11 miles away.
I know. One time I was out there, I visited their house.
Not too far. They were in Hawthorne, yeah, where the Red Cross guys grew up. Because Steve McDonough always liked to make a joke. But anyway, they had an incredible father, right, Murray? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. Is that the word you want to use?
Yeah. I mean, well, the recordings, you know, of Brian, like, holding his ear. Hey, Battleship, right, because he's hollering. What about the first gig you went and saw, Andy?
First gig, damn it. I was seeing, there were a lot of bands used to play locally in clubs.
Yeah. Remember, it's a Watt for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Yeah, I was seeing local bands, and my friends played in local bands. I wasn't in bands as a kid. I think it was the Fillmore East, which was Procol Harum, 10 Years After, and... I can't remember the other band.
But it was probably the Robin Trower Procol Harum.
No, Robin already left.
Wow.
I think.
Okay, so because
I think
you're around my age. Maybe you're a little older though.
I'm a little bit older than you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was born in '57.
Yeah, I'm a few years older than you.
Okay. So that was just a guess. And like my pop said, you know, when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. So I'm sorry. You gave me this tune here. Some Dictators. You gave me a few Dictators. And let's get the band back together. I'm going to play that.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
She'll start off that chunk of music with the Dictators doing Let's Get the Band Back Together. Albert Bouchard on drums. I was just enlightened to that fact, people. Thank you, Andy. Bronze Age UFO after that from Baltimore with Part B3. Their Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask Volume 2. Tom Rechion. SoCal. Free Music. LA Free Music Society. Meister. With Drishti Point. Then Wart and Tears, used to have Fun City there in Manhattan. And I got to record a Bobby Dylan song with Bob Quine, a Freeze Out, Vision of Joanne, and Lee Rinaldo, Steve Shelley. Totala from Italian part of Switzerland, almost fucked that up. Tenebra, Erasion. With Fireproof Box, the big hi to Larry up in Southern Oregon, and then finally Dictators. Who will save rock and roll? Who's the drummer man there?
That was J.P. Patterson on that.
Oh, okay, yeah, he's the. Okay. So look, you said something last spiel. Getting into bands. Wait, how did that happen? Or you know, you leave clarinet, you leave piano, somehow you get on bass.
I was writing. I was I had a fanzine called Teenage Wasteland Gazette, and I was friends with Richard Meltzer and Lester Bangs.
God, I love Richard Meltzer. I never got to
meet Lester Bangs. And they used to give me work writing, like for magazines. One day, Ross the Boss, who was playing in a band called Total Recall, comes up to me and says, I'm going to leave the band Total Crud. I want to start a new band. And I go, I'll play bass. I didn't own a bass. I never played bass before in my life.
All right.
And we said, we'll get Scott Kempner to play guitar. And Scott Kempner owned the guitar, but he'd never been in a band before. So, and that's how Dictators started. And then we went through 10 million drummers, you know.
Right. And then what about Singer Man?
And then I was singing on the first album.
Yeah.
And then we got Manitoba. He's more of a guy who likes the attention. Yeah. You know, for me, I don't care. I don't care if people pay attention to me.
Were you called dictators right from the beginning?
Oh, we went through a whole bunch of names like Cancer of the Penis, Tommy the Truck. What other names to go through? I can't remember. We settled on the dictators.
Can you remember the first gig you guys did?
I do. You want to hear about it?
Bring it.
We opened up for the Blue Oyster Cult.
Whoa.
And Iggy and the Stooges.
Whoa.
At Prince George Community College. Very first gig. First time ever on stage for me.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
How'd that happen?
We were managed by Sandy Perlman.
Ah,
and he would,
the OC man.
And he would get us gigs. And that was our first gig.
Wow. And then, now, how'd that gig go?
well, I wouldn't say the audience liked us, but I also wouldn't say the audience hated us. I think they just felt sorry for us because we were so incompetent.
And by that, you mean what? You didn't finish any tunes? Or?
No, we finished everything. We did our set. Yeah. Probably did, you know, maybe a half hour. You know, but I don't remember applause or boos or anything. They just ignored us. That's my memory.
Oh, wow. And how old were you?
Let me see. That was probably 1974. I was like 20 years old.
Wow. Okay. 20 years old is how old me and D Boom were when we started Minuteman.
Yeah.
So, with that gig, so would you call that gig a success then?
I call it dipping your toe in the water.
Okay. So what happened after that? Now, let me ask you about the material.
Material.
Did you write most of that stuff?
I wrote everything, yeah.
Whoa.
I wrote everything. Early on in the band, I said, gee, we got to get a Pete Townsend or something in this band if we want to really make it. And I said, wait, I could be Pete Townsend. And I started writing songs.
So you never wrote songs before that, right? Oh, you did.
No.
Well, you reinterpreted songs from that sheet music.
Yeah, I would strum a guitar, and I would put on a record. I'd try to figure out the solo, but I'd never been in a band. I had never written songs, and I, you know, barely even completed, you know, covering songs in my room with my acoustic guitar.
Okay. And then the other cats, they weren't volunteering themselves up for that mission.
I think I just took to it a little quicker than they did. I mean, they eventually, Scott became a great songwriter and Ross writes songs all the time.
Uh-huh.
But I think I just grabbed it a little earlier, got inspired a little earlier than they did. And they liked my songs. They were very happy to play my songs. So, you know, we just, you know, everybody just went along with it.
Now, you said first album. How'd that come apart? What do you call it? The record deal or something?
We were living in this house, a farmhouse in Kahansa, New York. It was $150 a month. So one pot deal and the rent was paid. And we set up in the living room. Everybody had a big bedroom. And we just sort of hung out and played every day. Went through a bunch of drummers. At some point, we had a bunch of songs. And we invited Sandy Perlman and Richard Meltzer to come up and see us. They come up. Sandy Perlman saw something. I don't know what the hell he saw, but he said, I want to manage you guys. I want to get you a deal. He got us a deal within months.
Wow. Now you guys, it was too quick. You're saying?
Yeah, he should have said, hey, let's get you out there playing. But the problem was, there's no place to play in New York.
This is what I was going to say, because you guys are in the, because me and D Boom lived this our whole teenage life. It's fucking arena rock. There's no club scene.
Right.
It's a nightmare.
If you played covers, there were gigs.
Oh, yeah, for that shit, yeah.
If you did original songs, you had a hard time finding a place to play.
Right. Fucking people don't know about that, you know, because the movement changed so much. But it was a fucking desert, man. It was bullshit. Because I was going to ask if you guys, were you just regional or did you go out on any tours?
There was a club opened up in Queens called the Coventry. It was a glam rock club.
I've read
Dolls
about it.
Played there. Kiss played there.
Right.
There were all these bands, local New York bands that were not that great, played there. And we played there, and we wore, you know, leather jackets, jeans, sneakers, you know. And in the audience, a little higher, their heads above anybody else, was Joe Ramone at all our shows, wearing glam rock and satin and platform shoes.
A little bit taller.
Way taller.
Yeah.
And he looked like a, you know, he looked weird.
He was a drummer man then, right?
Say again?
He was a drummer man.
He was a drummer, but he was a singer in a band called Sniper for a while.
Okay. Okay, so he was a drummer in the Ramones. Okay, yeah. Sniper, right. And it was kind of a glam rock band?
Yes.
And, well, you know, a lot of punk comes out of glam, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, me and Dee Boone's first gig was T-Rex. There was something about it that was, trying to get back to Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis. You know what I mean? And also an antidote to the Nuremberg Rally arena rock shit.
Nuremberg Rally. That's accurate.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird. But because I'm kind of in those times, I'm not as sophisto as you. But I could. Yeah, it's nothing. People, the last 40, 50 years, you're just in another mentality because this '70s thing was lame. It was just lame. There's no farm team system. No AAA, AA.
Not until punk rock took over and everything. Right. First it was like Boston, Toronto, San Francisco, LA had clubs, and then they started getting more. When you came up,
yeah,
there started to be a little clubs. You know, when the Minutemen first started touring,
right?
Then there was a series of clubs.
Black Flag helped build that circuit, and they took us.
Yes.
Our first tours was opening for them. They were people don't really give those guys credit. They literally created the circuit we still tour on.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
And, you know, it was hard to play clubs. A lot of them were ethnic halls. You know, people didn't know the Ukrainian hall, Polish hall, Italian-American mm-hmm. club. Yeah, because the rock and rollers, guys who called themselves rock and rollers, some of them, hated the movement. They thought it was jive. Well, everything's jive. To some extent. But they're just as fucking jive. Is my answer to them. But, man, I mean, and so you played a lot of discos. I know the big gigs in New York City, right, a tour was like going to New York City and turning around for us. And so it'd be like Peppermint Lounge or Danceteria. But those were the biggest gigs ever, you know, for us at that time and stuff. So, but think about Dictators. You guys are a little bit before that, right?
They call us the missing link.
And the missing link usually misses out on a lot of opportunity.
Kind of, because our record came out in 70, our first record came out in 75, and, you know, just the CBGB was just starting to, you know, book bands, and then in 76... is when the punk rock thing started to happen in New York.
Right.
And that's when Ramones put out their first record. So, we you know, we're known for our bad timing, Dictators.
But, I mean, there's all kinds of examples of that through history and shit. And they're hard to remember because they get fucking airbrushed out, you know. But I knew
you
guys. I'll tell you why I knew. Cream Magazine. That's how I knew.
Yes. Yeah, they were very supportive of us, but you know I'm making light of the situation. You know, we had bad timing, we never had hit records, but we were able to tour the world and able to make music, and I'm able to continue to make music, and that's the blessing is to make music. Every day you make music is a good day.
Absolutely, I'm right with you, Eddie. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 17, 2021 edition. Watt Peters, a special guest, Eddie. Shut up, hold tight for our
yo.
August 17, 2021, it's the second hour of Watt from Pedro Show.
Stop when you heard the cry. We'll be right back. Walking down these dirty streets, can't avoid the sybaritic creeps. Now the old talk shop for bling, where the chunkies used to sing, they go.
Show start off the second hour with Avenue A by the Dictators. Now, the way I know the Avenue, what they called them, yeah, alphabet, it was like drogas, it was heavy criminal. No,
yes,
okay.
you didn't go past First Avenue because no. Avenue A was not so good, Avenue B was full on drugs. Avenue C was, you got a knife in your throat.
The corner of get stabbed and get shot.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Then we had a Sam Locke Ward featuring Shane Hickey. Everything is not okay. Out of Iowa City, Bob Buckle from nearby, Bob Buckle Jr. from nearby Dubuque. Always home. Dictators, stay. I dig this tune. Lucas Abella, Corvette, the other version out of Sydney. And then finally, goddamn New York, the Dictators. Yeah, there was this kind of... Tell people about 70s New York. It kind of goes with Avenue A, right?
Yes, Avenue A is the story of the gentrification of New York City. So in the 70s, the city was bankrupt. There were huge swaths of the city that buildings just demolished and open rubble and open drugs and open prostitution. And that's meant cheap rents. And that meant the artists came to New York, the filmmakers, the visual artists.
Richard Hell.
Richard Hell. All these guys, people came to New York and they got these apartments paying $100, $200 a month rent.
Richard told me sometimes the landlord didn't even come by.
Landlord was probably abandoning the building sometimes. But it also meant that CBGB's, which was on the Bowery, in the worst neighborhood in New York City, and bands could play there, and no record companies came by for a year. It was just you would play a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, two sets a night. So you're playing six shows in a weekend. Now, previously, dictators, we wouldn't do six shows over 6 months. So CBGB's was allowing everybody to sort of get their act together out of the limelight, you know?
You know, Richard told me he got the idea from the New York Dolls doing that Mercer Arts Center, like the idea of the residency. Or was it Hilly's idea?
About CBGB's?
Yeah, about making a stand, like you're saying, you know, six shows in a weekend.
I think he wanted people doing original music because he didn't want to pay the ASCAP and BMI money. But I think Richard Lloyd from television is the guy who kind of discovered CBGB's and said, hey, I got a band called Television. Can we play here? And then after that, Ramones came in and Blondie and the Stilettos, all these other bands came in.
Talking Heads.
Yep, a little bit later. Yeah. A little bit later.
Yeah.
Television Patty.
God, even later, Minuteman. You know, I worked for Hilly a bunch of times. You know, he was a character. So. But let's talk about the arc of the Dictators.
Okay.
From this point on, where was the band going?
Okay, from CB in the late 70s?
Yeah.
Well, we got re-signed to Electro Asylum, made two more records, didn't sell any records, got dropped, you know, singers on drugs, so a few years of not playing that much. And then we started playing, you know, a little bit every year we do a show at CBGB's or we play the Ritz, we do a few shows. And then in 1994, a promoter from Spain saw us do a show at CBGB's. And he goes, hey, I want you to do a tour of Spain. We go, okay. We tour Spain. He says, successful tour. Hey, I want you to come back. A guy from Scandinavia says, I hear you're coming to Spain. Why don't you do Scandinavia at the same time you're doing Spain? So we did Spain and Scandinavia. From there, it sort of snowballed into, obviously, okay, the audience has developed. I credit a lot of it to the book Please Kill Me.
Oh, yeah.
And
Legs.
And the bands, Green Day, and also all these Offspring became popular. People started getting interested in the roots of rock and roll. So we were touring a lot, and we eventually I wrote new songs, put out a record in 2001. Of new material. Record is called DFFD. And played a little bit more. And then, you know, we sort of combusted again, you know, until more recently.
Okay, so that's the arc. That's good.
That's the arc. Look, you know, it's a Spinal Tap kind
right,
of thing.
Right,
you know?
Right. But then there's this other chapter. You gave me some Ramones, so I want to play Gonna Be All Right.
Yeah. Square, you know.
Swat for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off the Moans. It's going to be all right. Then Manuel Armida, he's from Mexico City. He lives up Yellowknife, Northwest Territory, Canada. La Scula. Pet Bottle Ninja after that with Creatures of Habit. Victor Timofey from the Ukraine with The Racing. And finally, the Ramones with Ignorance is Bliss. Now, people, these Ramones songs, co-written by Adney and Joey.
That's true.
Well, enlighten the listeners there, Adney.
I don't know. At some point in the 80s, you know, there was a lot of friction in the band between Joey and Johnny. That's, everybody knows that. D.D. wanted to get out of the band. He wanted to be a rapper. And I think they were losing inspiration. And so Joey called me up one day and says, hey, let's write some songs together. So we wrote some songs together. You know, some they recorded, some they didn't. Joey always started playing, and he was starting to play outside the Ramones. And he had a band called The Resistance, I played bass for. And eventually he did his solo record, and I played on his solo record, which was recorded while he was sick. So he was...
Oh, yeah, the final. Now, did you meet Joey at that Coventry Club you were talking about when you saw that taller guy?
Yeah. I wasn't friendly with him then. He was a guy, I would see him all the time and go, hey. And then I saw a picture of the Ramones on a lamppost in East Village, the Ramones. And there's that guy. I said, this guy's singing in a band. I got to see it. And I went to see them back. This is in 75, I think. One of the very early shows at CBGB's. Blondie opened up, maybe 15 people in the audience. And Blondie, they were not good. I thought, these guys, I said, that band has no chance of success.
Wrong.
And the Ramones come on, and they played, you know, 10 songs in 15 minutes, you know. And this is in the 70s. I'm sitting through drum solos longer than that.
Yeah, right. You know? That was my first experience seeing him at the Whiskey. It was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I'm used to these three-hour fucking gigs. I liked it.
They were great. I liked them. I didn't know they were going to change the world, but they were great. And they knew the Dictators. They knew our record. We were friendly with them. And over the years, we played shows with them. And, you know, I became friendly with all of them. But Joey was always my main man.
Now, it was important about Didi, right? Because he wrote most of the tunes.
He wrote a lot of the songs, but Joey wrote Sheena's Punk Rocker.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote
I'm Skated.
He wrote Beat on the Brat.
I think Didi even wrote some songs when he was out of the band.
He did. He did write songs out of the band.
The guy who couldn't write songs was Johnny, right?
No, Johnny didn't write that. No.
Havana Affair, I think, is the only one, maybe.
Yeah, he had it. But, Tommy wrote I Want to Be Your Boyfriend, and Tommy wrote Blitzkrieg Bop also.
Oh, yeah, well, Tommy, I think he did also the lead guitar shit, right?
He did some.
Because me and Tom were talking about Blondie, but I got to do the first album when I borrowed your bass with Clem Burke at the Ritz. It was called Webster right. Hall or something. And Sheena shows up not knowing any of the tunes.
Who showed up not knowing the song?
Sheena.
Really?
I wouldn't shit you about that. He's a nice guy, though. I love him.
Oh, she's great. Love Sheena. Yeah. Great guy.
If you're going to do the whole first Ramones album on their 40th birthday, learn the tunes, dude. Fucking Clem came down to my prac pad here in Pedro like 7 or 8 times, all the way from the Val to prac with me. That guy is beautiful. Beautiful guy, Clem Burke.
Great drummer.
Look, we're at the end of... Yeah, and a great drummer, too. Really.
And it was an honor for you to play my bass. Let me say that.
I love your bass. Badass bridge. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. August 17, 2021 edition. Watt Pedro Show special guest Adney. Share it off. Hold tight for hour 3. August 17, 2021. It's the third hour. Watt for Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
said, we know it's a school night. We know you're not really partying as much as you did Tuesday night. It is Wednesday night. Party hard on Tuesday night. Party hard on Wednesday night. Party hard on Thursday night. Party hard on Friday night. Party hard on Saturday night. Party hard on Sunday night. Party hard on Monday night. Tuesday comes around. Do it all over again. Yeah! This song is called Punk Rock Dream. Because you're sleeping a lot, too. So you have a punk rock dream every now and then. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everyone, little punk rock dream, just because
gentlemen, I crashed that cymbal hard for you, and I deaden it quickly for you. Example. I do that for you.
Stop thinking about it. Stop
Buy them to use.
You hear that, people? And he's enlightened us to the fact he only buys stuff he uses. He's not a shit hoarder.
That's right.
Right. Okay. So if he ain't using it, it's out there. So maybe somebody else can write the next Blitzkrieg bop. Let's get the band back together. Okay. We start the third hour off with Agnes Chernoff doing Sweet Joy. This is a song you wrote for Joey. And then
Sweet Joey.
Yeah, if Bawana yes. After that, Al Margolis up in Chester, New York, another up the river hamlet from my heart directly. Babes, New York City, Punk Rock, Dream Live, Shugo Tokumaru with Typewriter. Stop Thinking About It from Joey Ramone. I think this is one you helped co-write, right? Chico cool. Libre, Un Shipibo. In España, Promises for Public Record, and then finally, What a Wonderful World which Satch did. But Joy Eat has a beautiful version, too. So, when you wrote this song, this ain't too long ago when you did this song for Joey, right?
Which one? Something About It?
Sweet Joey.
Sweet Joey, yeah. That's a few years ago, and I made a video. I made a really good video. You know, people send me emails saying they cry after they saw it. But I don't know. I just felt I had to write something about Joey, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I captured, you know, his personality in there. Yeah, that was 4 years ago, three or four years ago.
And then stopped thinking about it. It was like around the same batch as the Ignorance is Bliss and It's Gonna Be All Right.
No, that was after.
Okay.
Ignorance, those were written, back in around 1990, 91 for the Brain Drain record. Stop Thinking About It was for his first solo record that was released in 2000. Wait, he died in 2001.
Yeah.
Probably was 2002. So we probably wrote that in around 2000-ish or so when we were recording it.
So he was sick?
Well, he was getting treatments, but he was getting better.
Okay.
As that, you know, he was healthy. Sometimes himself, and we did two shows. With me, Marky, and Daniel Ray on guitar at CBGB's, one show at CBGB's and one show at the Continental. He wasn't ready to tour, but we did two shows locally.
Okay. And then what about on the ID music thing? What were you doing at the same time?
I was producing records. I was producing bands.
The Dictator thing was gone by, we're talking early 2000s, so a producer.
Yeah, yeah.
What, how'd you like that gig, producer?
Producing? Hey, you know, I was just looking to pay the bills, you know?
Yeah, okay, I understand that part. But no, what about the actual act of
it? I like making music, I like making records, but, you know, I'm not having hits. So if I'm not performing, I'm either trying to write a song or I'm trying to make a record. You know, I just want to make music to pay my bills. That was my goal.
I know, but I mean, there's ways, like playing bass is one way, writing songs is another way, producing is another way.
Right.
Producing.
So I got to balance. I do all three. So a little bit of money here. Okay, the gigs dry up. You know,
I produce
the band. That dries up. I'm writing a song. And, you know, I was able to get some songs, a lot of songs in movies and TV shows. So, you know, I've been pretty lucky
producing band, it takes some, like, people skill, right?
People skill, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Producing
a
lot of work.
Yeah. That's why I asked you about that, because, man,
from pre-production to recording to mixing to mastering, you know, it's a lot of time.
Right. And you think that's changed with all the home recording?
Totally changed.
Okay.
Dictators, we all record in our homes and trade files.
Yeah. Watt does a lot of that. Look, you got a project called The Master Plan, and you sent me some music. I want to play Barbecue. Or BBQ.
Great.
for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with the Master Plan doing BBQ. Then we had 191230 the day before the last day. This is part two of three with this Tricephalus collab out of Berlin. Picciato. And an Irish friend of theirs. And then finally, the Master Plan with 14th Street. Tell me about the Master Plan.
Well, just some buddies of mine, and we just decided to, you know, make some music for fun. It's Keith Strang from the Fleshtones, who I went to high school with. Bill Millhiser, who drums in the Fleshtones, and my buddy Paul Johnson. And it was just, hey, Paul had a studio in his basement, and we just went down there, banged things out. We made two records. We did three tours of Europe. We played U.S. basically to have a good time. I think the music represents that. And the intro, we are about to do another single, because Keith Strang lives in Sweden. He's coming to New York in September. We're going to do a few days in the studio and record a few tunes. So we'll see what happens again.
Now, is the dynamic different than Dictate? Are you writing all the material?
No. It's a lot of fun. Everybody writes, everybody sings, everybody plays. And it's a lot looser than the Dictators. It's a little more, let's have fun. No attitudes or anything like that. It's like a vacation.
Like cutting down on the drama?
Yes. No drama in that band.
All right, so you think over the years you've learned something about being in a band then?
I'd say I have a PhD in being in a band.
That's fucking great. That's great. Because, you know, remember we were talking about producing and people skills. Actually, just being in a band requires people skills, huh?
It's like being married to four or five people, you know, depending on.
Yeah. Okay, so right now, is that the Master Plan is your current baby?
No, it hasn't been, but Dictators are my baby now. Because,
okay.
Yeah, we're putting out another song. We're doing a video on Thursday, actually, for our new song.
And who's in the band?
It's Ross the Boss, Albert Bouchard.
Whoa!
And, yeah, Albert's in the band.
Wow!
And Scott Kempner was in the band. Scott Kempner, the original guitar player from Dictators, he's got some health issues. So we just got a new guy in the band, this guy Keith Ross from Jersey. And he's a DJ on Sirius, and he's played in a lot of bands. And he's kind of fit in really, really smoothly. So I'm pretty positive about the band right now.
And how would you compare it? Well, you say you got a song. Right? Why didn't you give it to me?
A song?
Yeah. You said you're coming out with a Dictator song.
A new song, yeah. And it'll be out in September. We're doing a video on Thursday.
And what's it called?
Well, I can't tell you.
Okay. Yeah, you'd have to shoot me.
It's a cover.
Oh, wow. Or a reinterpretation?
Yes, an interpretation.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, because when will this be up on the internet?
About an hour and a half.
Oh, really? Okay, I don't want to say yet, but it's a cover of a band that you would never expect the Dictators to cover. That's all I will say.
Okay. Who came up with the name for the band?
Because
you said you went through a lot of them, right? Tommy the Truck.
We had a list of names. I don't really remember. I could say me and take the credit, but I don't really remember. We just had a list of names, and then we liked Dictators. It just sounded macho, you know. So we liked that.
Yeah, we used to have a joke. We, in here at Pedro, we'd say Dickators.
Dickators?
Like eating, past tense of eat. Yeah, we're idiots. Yep. Yeah. Slow learners here in Pedro. Okay. Sorry, Ed. Look, I can't wait to see the video. I can't see, and Albert will be playing with you in it, right?
Sir, say again?
Albert will be playing with you in that video. I can't wait to see this.
He's already in we have two videos up for Goddamn New York, and let's get the band back together.
Okay.
So you can check it out if you want to see that.
Yeah, sure.
And the new one will be up.
Where are you on the, is there a Dictator's website?
There's an old website. We're revamping it.
And
so
what's the URL?
It's the dictators.com. But it's not. Looks like an antique website. Something like that. It's from the 1700s.
What were they called? Angel Fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, man, whatever you got coming, please come back on the show when you got it. Because
my pleasure.
Sorry, I'm dealing with you big time. Thank you so much, Andy. Truly.
Mike, an honor and a pleasure. I love your enthusiasm. I love how you're exposing all these, you know, unknown bands on your podcast. And
I never use the P word, but it's my debt to the movement to expose, like you say.
Right. Yeah. And you're my compadre because you play music. Because there's nothing else you would rather do than play music. And that's
right. How it's a lifeline. It's a lifeline.
It's a lifeline. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. People, thanks, buddy. It's been August 17, 2021 edition of WAPD Order. So thank you, brother Abby. Keep your powder dry.